Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 15th day of March 2016. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. It's primary day here in the state of Illinois. Be sure to go vote. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. We'll also hear some excerpts from last week's presentation at the All Day Ag Outlook by Emerson Nafziger, the do's and don'ts of cutting costs for production agriculture. And then, as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast, that with Don Day, a day weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's take a look at the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for the day. May futures in the corn pit at $3.68.5, down a quarter. July at $3.73.5, unchanged. September futures $3.78.75, up a quarter. And December corn at $3.87.25, a quarter higher. May contract unchanged for next year at $4 even. Soy complex, May beans at $8.92, down 3.75. July at $8.97.75, down 4.25. And August beans at $9, down 4 cents. November beans, $9.02.75, down 4.25. January down 4.25 as well at $9.07. Bean meal, May contract down $3.30 at $2.68.20. The bean oil, 4 cents higher at $32.49. May futures in the wheat pit, soft red, down now penny and a half at 4.77.25. July at 4.84.5, down 1.25. And the hard red July at 4.98.75, down a quarter of a cent. Live cattle futures for the day. Nearby contract April at $140.67.5, $1.37.5 higher. June at $130.22.5, up $1.40. And the March feeder cattle at $164 and a nickel, up $2. April up $2.42.5 at $165 even. Lean hogs in the April contract at $70.82.5 per 100 pounds, up a nickel, and the May futures there at $79.25, up 35 cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Visit us online at willag.org. There you can find all of our agricultural programming not long after it airs on our radio stations. Commodity Week, in fact, is up and on the website prior to the time that it airs on our radio stations. That's at willag.org, willag.org.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
Checking up on some of the outside markets at this hour. Crude oil trading $36.34 a barrel, down 84 cents. Ethanol futures at $1.43, 8 tenths of a cent lower. Gasoline at $1.40.5, down a penny and 7 tenths. And heating oil at $1.77, or rather $1.17.5. That's down a penny and 9 tenths of a cent for the day. Natural gas at $1.84.8 is up 2.9 of a cent. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 17,219 is 3 points lower. The dollar is unchanged at 96.66, and the gold futures at $1,231.75 a troy ounce are down $13.25. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area. Mostly sunny skies, a high of 71 today, a southeast wind at 17. Tonight, showers, thunderstorms before midnight. Showers after that, mostly cloudy, a low of 45, breezy, and a southeast wind at 15 to 20, 60% chance of rainfall overnight. Wednesday, mostly sunny and a high of 61 degrees. Coming up this week, we'll be traveling again. Our Ag Outlook panel calendar shows us in Taylorville on Thursday evening. That at Krieger Sports and Grill, we'll have Ellen Dearden, Merrill Crowley, and Kurt Kimmel with us that night. If you have the opportunity, visit with us in Taylorville at Krieger's Sports and Grill. Starts that evening at 6 o'clock and will run through about 9 that night. Again, you can find all that information online at willag.org.
agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon, the 15th day of March. It's primary day here in the great state of Illinois. Go vote, please. On the phone line from the great state of Indiana is Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Why, good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about what looked like to be a pretty quiet trade in Chicago today.
Well, you know, we'd seen a little enthusiasm in the beans over the last week and a half or so, but the Brazilian real continued to fall a little bit today, and that brought a few more beans sells out by the Brazilian farmers. They appointed the past president to a government position, which means they can't prosecute him while he's still in that position. So the idea is the impeachment and getting to the root of all evil, why isn't going to happen for a little while. So that and the Argentine corn basis continues to sink a little bit. It's just 29 over the board of trade, where the Gulf's at 45 to 50 over. So we saw a little bit of easing in the corn and the beans today.
Do you think that we will see the beans begin to make a rally? They're up on the top end at this point, and they haven't dropped back as quickly as they have in previous rallies.
You know, the corn seems to be a little stronger than the beans, but I think we're going to run into some trouble up here. I know that there's a couple of the fund managers that had stops if we'd get above 908 basis November beans to get out of some things. Of course, the high was 906, and we closed down around 902 and a quarter. So if we would make some breaks up through there, we could see a little technical buying come in, but we've got to see a little more strength than what we saw today.
How soon will producers in the Delta region, given all the rainfall that they've had, be able to move and to put corn in the ground?
You know, that's a big question. Continue what we look at. There was talk, and I saw two or three news wires popping out today talking about when the prevented plant date is for Louisiana, Alabama, and Mississippi and down in that area. And it's coming up fast at the end of the month here. So, you know, will they be able to be in and get their stuff done, or will there be some prevented plant or failed crop taken down that area? We might see a million acres less of corn because of this.
Still have some time, I suppose, if people haven't made a decision on crop insurance. They've got a couple of hours yet left to get that decision
made. We've got till midnight, actually, if you can get hold of your agent and get something signed. But it's pretty much nearing the end for the day.
All right. And everybody, and you're almost done with that process, most people stay with what they did last year?
I would say that 90% of the people basically kept it the same. You know, our price was a little lower. The price of the product's going to be just a little bit lower, but your price of the inputs are down about the same percent as what our coverage is. So if you know, it was a good decision to do it last year, it's probably the same decision this year.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Dad.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Joins us on the Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report each and every week. Don't forget that we have a calendar up on our website at willag.org. This week on Thursday evening, we'll be at Krieger Sports and Grill for those of you who listen to us on WTIM out of Taylorville. This was in your backyard on Thursday evening. Starts at 6 o'clock. Ellen Dearden, Merrill Crowley, Kurt Kimmel will be with us there. Sponsored by the Christian County Farm Bureau. And then on Saturday, we'll be up at the Weitendorf Agricultural Education Center that belongs to the Joliet Junior College for the Chicago Farmers Farmland Forum. We hope to see you at one of those events. In today's agricultural news, the NFU, the National Farmers Union, now supports voluntary GMO labeling. Following the debate that took place at the organization's annual convention last week, the Farmers Union previously had supported mandatory labeling of GMO products. The change in the position came after what DTN called a very wrenching debate that pitted traditional NFU membership against farmers that are more likely to be growers of organic food crops. The debate comes as the Senate is expected to vote on the voluntary labeling proposal by Kansas Republican Senator Pat Roberts sometime this week. However, USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack last week said a voluntary labeling measure would not get the needed amount of votes to pass the Senate. Vilsack wants a mandatory disclosure law requiring smart labels to direct consumers to more information. A third option, full mandatory labeling, is supported by some Senate Democrats. Staying in Washington, D.C. and with the NFU, House GOP leaders will try this week to win over budget hawks opposed to last year's deal to boost spending. A new deal could mean new cuts, and no deal could again scuttle spending and tax bills. Budget hawks are demanding new cuts to offset spending increases in last year's budget deal, but they've already rejected cuts to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. That leaves other areas, including agriculture, vulnerable. The December deal reversed a 10-year, $3 billion cut in crop insurance, but the new budget trouble leaves the National Farmers Union's Chandler Gould worried since House Speaker Paul Ryan proposed crop insurance cuts just a few years back.
I think we're even in a more critical situation where, unfortunately, the speaker does not see the importance of agriculture and the role that it plays in rural America, the jobs that it provides, and how important crop insurance is to help mitigate the risk that comes with food, fiber, and fuel production.
Gould says conservative House Agriculture Chairman Mike Conaway is helping defend against more agricultural cuts, and Senate Republicans have decided to work on spending bills that stick to last year's budget deal.
Hopefully, between the farm groups going up there, the support of Chairman Conaway, and knowing that the Senate will not be able to take as drastic measures as the House may put in place, we should and hopefully will be able to salvage most of the programs, but this fight is not over.
GOP leaders in the next few days will try to move bills through the budget, Ways and Means, and Energy and Commerce committees by large margins in hopes of pressuring as many as 100 budget detractors to embrace a GOP plan on the House floor. The American Farm Bureau Federation and more than 250 agriculture-related groups are lobbying against further cuts to farm safety net, conservation, and nutrition programs. Farm Bureau's R.J. Carney says Farm Bureau wants Congress to leave the Farm Bill alone.
We oppose any attempt to reopen the Farm Bill. So we will work with Congress to prevent the Farm Bill from opening. And what occurred back in the 2015 bipartisan agreement that Congress adheres to what they just passed when they reinstated the $3 billion cuts.
President Obama proposed in his fiscal 2016 budget a 10-year, $18 billion cut to crop insurance. The House Ag Committee argued last month to the Budget Committee that the 2014 Farm Bill made $16 billion in cuts over the 10-year period. And finally today, the National Weather Service's outlook for next week calls for below normal temperatures across the plains and the Midwest, maintaining concerns about the threats to an early emerged winter wheat crop. The report looks forward to March 19th through the 23rd and shows cooler weather poses a freeze risk to the early emerged winter wheat. We'll have a more complete look at that when we talk with Don Day at the end of our program. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. 1 week ago today, we held the all-day agricultural outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. I asked a few folks to come in and give you some do's and don'ts to save costs during this growing season. Emerson Nafziger, agronomist from here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I, took the stage and told producers just exactly what he thought they might be able to do this season to cut some cost. Now, here's Emerson Nafziger from the All Day Ag Outlook.
In terms of hybrid, the one question I've heard more than any, is the non-GMO hybrids. And I just put a little blurb in there. We have an increased number of non-GMO hybrids in our hybrid trials. And on average, the one in this region closest to here was about 10 bushel lower yield for those that were entered in the non-GMO versus those that were entered as GMO hybrids this last year. And I put a warning there. I said only these compare only hybrids that companies enter. So we don't go out and find ones that we think are similar but just lacking the traits. So that makes a simple arithmetic. I said the price premium plus seed cost savings less any at insect or weed control costs would have to be $35 to $40 per acre to make non-GMO production more profitable. In terms of seeding rate, I did put a little data together there. I didn't show you any data on this. But using a return to seed approach, which is sort of the economic one, over 27 site years of data over the last 4 years, we found the most profitable plant population to be exactly 33,200 plants per acre. I think that's a good place to be. And so have a good reason to be outside of that general range. I didn't write it down for you there, but you didn't lose a dollar per acre until you got less than 31.6 or more than 34.8. Now, this included 2012, where we had some unusual responses. Typically, today's hybrids, the population goes and they go like this, and then they level off, and then they'll go out to 50,000 if you want them to. But out there, you know, right when your yield increases stop is where your losses to added seed start, because you're putting seed costs in and you're not getting anything back. So I did that with those 27 curves, and that's what we came up with. So that's, and I was using $3.75 a bushel and $3 per thousand for seed to come up with those calculations. So $3 per thousand for seed is probably, that's $240 a unit. I'm guessing some of you are paying more than that, maybe most of you. Certainly the catalog says they're more than that, but what you're actually paying may be something different. So nitrogen is probably the big question, and you're seeing... Well, first of all, I start out with rate. Our Central Illinois with the nitrogen rate calculator, most of you have used it. Search for it and find it if you haven't, and use it. At the current price ratio, and generally that ratio tends to be about one bushel of corn buys about 10 pounds of nitrogen. It comes and goes from that over the years, but it always drifts back towards that. And today it's not too far from that. Corn may be 350, but I think, well, urea's gotten very cheap right now, and I think you can still buy 10 pounds and maybe a little more than 10 pounds with a bushel of corn. And though that's that ratio, you can enter it in the calculator and come up with a number there. But it's about 170 pounds for corn-following soybean in central Illinois, about 200 pounds for corn-following corn. Indiana has taken the same approach. They only have corn following soybean numbers in the calculator for Indiana. And in northwest Indiana, prairie soils, it's about 175, similar to what we have in Illinois. And in central Indiana, from here southeast and east of here, it's about 200 pounds. That makes sense because the soil organic matters are lower and you need to provide more nitrogen from fertilizer because the soil's not going to provide as much. Now, the first point under that with nitrogen, when I just looked at this data, you're the first ones hearing anything about it. We took soil samples in the last week and a half, and we took them last fall after application. We took them in January at Urbana, and we took them in on February 23rd in the same plots in Urbana. And I was a little shocked to recover less than 50%. That's in the top 2 feet of soil in the samples that we just took compared to what we found in early January. And by early January, we hadn't lost any from the fall application as far as we could tell. By now, I can't say that. About 60% was ammonium, and the longer we can keep it ammonium, the happier we are. It doesn't leave the soil as ammonium, it does as nitrate. The fact that 60% is ammonium sounds good, except what does it mean? The nitrate got lost. And we're down to about 50% of the nitrogen we recovered the first week of January. Using NSERB did not affect the amount of nitrogen we recovered. Another sort of a shock. We did the same thing. We took the same samples at Monmouth. I looked at those numbers this morning. We had a little bit higher levels there, but putting on 200 in the fall, we had about 150 to 160 pounds left there. Now the checks, those that didn't get any nitrogen in those soils with organic matter, have about 40 to 50 pounds in them. So if we're looking at the difference, which is the accurate way to look at it, you know, we've lost a fair amount. Now, we're going to keep looking at that into the summer, and we'll keep you informed about what we see. It's not time to say, well, that's all lost. Let's put on some more. If we don't get real wet conditions, and it's supposed to rain only 3 inches in the next week, apparently, then we aren't going to worry much about loss. We're new into this looking at loss the way we're looking at it, which is tracking it in the soil. And we don't yet have reason to panic about that. But the good news is we have the ability to come back and put more nitrogen on if we need it, and if we think we need it. And also nitrogen is fairly inexpensive. One of the questions that I put down there, we've had quite a bit of anhydrous put on in the last 2 weeks in central, west central Illinois, is whether or not you use NSERV if you're putting it on this early. We don't have a lot of experience with that. I would be a little reluctant. You know, anhydrous, right when you put it on, is all ammonium. It's not going to go anywhere. It takes time to convert it. But our soil temperatures are clearly on their way up this week. And once we get to 50, you know, that's that rate of conversion, nitrification starts to go up. Fungicides, we've seen some increases with fungicide with routine applications. We've not been able to cover costs with them. Use them if you have a foliar disease that is developing. Somebody asked the question, we'll move on to soybean. Somebody asked the question about soybean on soybean. We actually have a study running in western Illinois at two sites there. Over the last 10 years, we've only averaged about 5% lower yield with soybean following soybean than soybean following corn. And those are continuous soybeans. They've been continuous for almost 20 years. Now, that 5% might seem a little optimistic to you, but if you've not done soybeans after soybeans because you always learned that was the dumbest thing you could do, you can forget about that. Just make sure you don't have high cyst numbers, and if you have a cyst nematode-resistant variety, that's the one thing that can plague them. Agronomically, they're not going to be a disaster. If I was in a bad mood, I might say let's figure on 10% lower yield, but I really don't see a reason for it to be more than that. And then the list on soybean can be pretty quick. 15-inch rows average about 2 bushel more than 30-inch rows across a bunch of trials. It's one of the most consistent things we do to increase soybean yields. Some of you have gone back to 30-inch rows from 15s and just figure that you're losing 2 bushel and it still might make sense for you, and you're not going back, I know. Seeding rate, I'm not one of those people that says, oh, 120 seeds, 110,000 seeds is enough. Sometimes it isn't. And we usually get by with 100,000 plants, but not always. And so I think the 140,000, which is sort of today's standard seed unit, is just about right. Fungicide and insecticide, this has given some yield increases in about a third of our trials. It does not cover the costs on average. I think it's one of those things a lot of people got into the habit of doing it when soybeans were high priced, and it's hard to get out of those habits. Nitrogen on soybeans, I put some verbiage there. The bottom line is, don't do it.
That's a lightly edited excerpt of Emerson Nafziger's discussion last week at the All Day Agricultural Outlook at the Beef House. It happened 1 week ago today. Now, coming up next, we'll take a look at the weather forecast in just a couple of minutes right here on Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for WILL comes from the Friends of WILL and Busey. With nearly 150 years of agribusiness experience, Busey offers solutions, resources, and expertise to support landowners. Busey, your dream, our promise.
Capistrano may have their swallows, but Hinckley, Ohio has turkey buzzards. They return to the town each year on or about this same date for the summer. They winter in Dade County, Florida. On this day in agricultural history in 1858, Liberty Hyde Bailey was born. An American horticulturalist, he helped create the science of horticulture, made systematic studies of cultivated plants, and was a recognized authority on plant pathology and agriculture. He made special studies of blackberries, grapes, cabbages, and squashes. Bailey served as Dean of Agriculture at Cornell University for 15 years. In 1889, Melvin Reuben Bissell died, Bissell invented the carpet sweeper in 1876. The inner workings and cases were made by women working in their homes. Tufts of hog bristles were bound with string dipped in hot pitch, inserted in brush rollers, and finally trimmed with scissors. In 1980, McDonald's test marketed Chicken McNuggets in Knoxville, Tennessee. The chicken nugget was invented in the 1950s by Robert Baker, a food science professor at Cornell University. And in 1998, Edwin Shoemaker died, an American inventor and engineer. He created the recliner chair and founded the Lazy Boy Furniture Company. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families for 100 years. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 15th day of March. You still have time to go vote in the state of Illinois. Please do so. Make time yet this afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined now by Don Day at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, where they held their caucuses already. Congratulations to you folks out there. But we probably ought to talk about the weather forecast, Don. I want to start not here in Illinois and not there in Wyoming, but way down south for us, at least in the Delta region, where it's warmed up, and at this time of the year they'd usually like to start getting a good planting season underway, but they've been awfully wet. What can you tell me about them?
Yeah, when you get 10 to 20 inches of rain, it's going to take a while to dry out, and unfortunately there's a little bit of good news and some bad news when it comes to getting back out and getting the ground dry again, because while it is going to be dry and warmer, as you mentioned here, for the next 72 hours. We see the Delta getting wet again with some areas of showers and thunderstorms developing this weekend. And then there'll be a little bit of a break early next week, but the middle to the next week, it gets wet again. Now, this is not to be unexpected in a strong El Nino year. This is the time of year, especially with a strong El Nino, we usually see some real wet weather moving into the southern tier. So while there's going to be some opportunity for drier weather the next couple of days, there's still some wet weather in the future.
Okay, so we're getting to the end of March, and producers across the Midwest will be thinking, I need to start planting corn eventually as well. I'm just kind of interested at this point in how the season appears to be setting up. Are there dry areas across the Corn Belt states, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska? Are there wet areas at this point, or is it just a normal growing season beginning?
Well, if we were to look at the soil moisture profile, we would see that the driest areas right now would be in the southern and far southwest areas of the Corn Belt. But for the most part, our soil moisture conditions are in pretty decent shape. So we don't have any areas right now that are a big concern. And from what we're seeing for the rest of this month, as we go into April and May, there's no signature or pattern that we see showing up that would scream out warm and dry yet. Now, as we get into the summer season, that may be a little bit of a different story, but spring precipitation, I think, is going to be on par with the averages.
And finally, I'd like to stay in the United States to work some of the winter wheat areas, especially the Oklahoma, Texas, Kansas areas, where I think that crop came out of dormancy something like, 3 to 6 weeks early. Any concern at this point about the crop that is now up and running and growing?
Yeah, I think we should definitely keep an eye on temperatures. Now, we see a much colder air mass settling into those winter wheat areas of Kansas, Oklahoma, Colorado, the Oklahoma and Texas panhandles here in the coming weeks. Will it be cold enough to cause some damage? Right now, I think the worst of the cold air will stay to the north, but there's definitely a trend towards cooler weather headed towards those winter wheat areas and hopefully some precipitation. So it's something to watch, Todd. There's still a lot of cold air left up in Canada that has the opportunity to move south, But right now, it's not directed towards those winter wheat areas, but it's something to keep a close eye on.
Those darn Canadians. Oh, well, hey, thanks so much. I appreciate your help today. We'll talk with you again next week.
Sounds good.
That's Don Day of Day Weather. I'm Todd Gleason.